This is episode 505. Do you want a natural alternative to Ozempic or Mounjaro? Well, that solution is in this episode. The conversation I had here with such a lovely herbalist from New York was just beautiful, and we talked about herbalism and what it really is as a medical modality, why some people don't take it seriously, the marketing issues that show up in the herbal and natural product space by big companies, and the astonishing amount of scientific research that exists in the herbal space. And as I touched on already, we also talk about something that really might interest you, which is how to lose weight and heal your metabolism, amongst other ailments, without medication and instead with herbs. If that's in your wheelhouse of interest, then here we go. Even as a scientist and nutritionist, I was secretly trapped in binge eating and hooked on sugar. And let's be real, the so-called solutions can feel overwhelming. Calorie counting, restrictive diets, weight loss pills, surgery, and even injections. I'm Maddie Lansdowne, and the truth is, more nutrition facts aren't the answer. It's understanding why we eat the way we do. And you don't need to be perfect to achieve great health either. That shift changed everything for me, and now I share it here as the host of the Real Weight Loss Coach podcast, where it's my mission to help 1 million people break free from the yo-yo diet cycle for good, by bringing you the conversations that really matter in nutrition, health, and psychology. And I'm not afraid to challenge mainstream health advice when it doesn't stack up. Are you ready? Let's begin. What's up, my healthy friends? Thanks so much for being here. And if anything in the intro that you just heard resonated, or you've got challenges with weight loss or keeping it off, or you've got a long history of possibly yo-yo dieting with no consistent outcomes, then one of our real weight loss programs might be for you. So if you want to know if we might be able to help, it might be the right thing, then book a call with either myself or someone in the team. And to do that, scroll down to the show notes or the caption, click the link, answer a few questions, pick a time, and let's chat about how we might be able to support you. So today's guest is Rochelle Robinette, and along with being a registered herbalist, lifelong naturalist, writer, and educator, she's also the founder of Pharmacon Supernatural, her very own unique herbal gummy company, as I understand. She's an author with her debut book, Naturally, The Herbalist's Guide to Health and Transformation, and we're going to drop in some interesting conversations right about now. So welcome to the show, Rochelle.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm happy that you're here. So you bounce between New York and Costa Rica, which we were just touched on before. What a contrast.
Yes, by design. Yeah, I've been in New York for probably 15 years now. And when I travel, I tend to travel to jungles, beachside jungles. And long story short, I fell completely in love with Costa Rica some years ago and bought a home down there and just am now spending more and more time in, unsurprisingly, a blue zone. So it's a great fit.
Yeah, I've spent maybe almost two months in Costa Rica, a long time ago now, but I have fond memories and yeah, my heart is constantly yearning to get back there.
Yeah, it's special. I mean, everyone has their place, you know, and that it just hit me really hard. It was clear that's my place. My best self came out there. I learned so much so quickly. It was really life-changing, actually.
Do you find it difficult to adjust going back to New York?
Yes. I find it very difficult to adjust. And I think that's healthy. I mean, it's challenging, but oh my goodness, is it informative, you know, to reach a place where we feel, like I said, most ourselves, most balanced, but most well. And then to return to a place that I've lived for 15 years and to see how difficult it is to reacclimate and to just be blown away by what I used to be able to tolerate and endure. It is a fascinating sort of back and forth, but it is often quite painful. Yes.
Yeah, I'm curious what your perspective is on this, because something I'm often talking about a lot, especially with clients and possibly you are as well, is just that we weren't designed for this level of stress and intensity. And so in some aspects, whenever we get away or we get some space in our nervous system has the time to sort of breathe and calm down and sort of maybe get back to its natural state, it's sort of a reminder that, oh, the world that we're in really is a manufactured, high-paced burnout scenario. But I'm equally impressed by the humans ability to adapt and work in a place or operate in a world like New York. Like, which do you lean in the direction of, that we should be getting back to nature or we should be focusing on adapting to the chaos of reality?
Yeah, I mean, what a question. I mean, I too am really impressed by, you know, our ability to adapt. And I think, again, that's something I've been self-reflecting on, you know, recently as I'm making these transitions. You know, I think there's a lot that goes into answering that. You know, for example, in my case, you know, I moved to New York to build a career. I was very ambitious. I had really aggressive goals. I knew that New York was the place where there was no ceiling. I could do anything. And, you know, when I was moving to New York, I also considered, you know, I had been on a retreat with somebody that I really respected in Honduras at the time. And she sort of said, do you want to come and live here and work with me? And I was like, is this the point in my life where I go jungle, you know, and I just like skip
full jungle.
The system. Yeah, exactly. Like skip, it's a verb. Skip the, you know, just opt out of the matrix. And I thought, no, I need for my life, I need to do what I need to do. And then later, if I want to do that, you know, hopefully I get to a place where I can then opt out. So for me, that was very important. For other people, that might not be important, meaning that phase of hustle and grind, which I've realized required that adaption, you know, required a lot of suppression as well. For example, play and pleasure and all of these things, those took a sideline for, you know, a decade while I was working, you know, working my face off. So I think it really depends on, you know, who you are and what you need for your life. But the perspective, of course, that we're afforded by getting out and being able to reflect on things. And I think sometimes we have to get out a little longer than might be comfortable to really see sort of what we're in. That perspective at least is so valuable, because then we can choose to reenter, or we can say, that is madness. I shouldn't be doing that.
Totally. And I think as well, some people, I mean, go their whole lives in a job or a marriage or a situation that they get, you know, to the end of and think, why did I waste so much time? And yes. I think just as you're saying, it's like the lack of ability to separate and get perspective.
Yes. Yeah, totally agree. Yeah. And you can get that perspective and say, this is what I should be doing, or, you know, again, this is not what I should be doing. And that's obviously not easy to then get out of all of the time. But, you know, for a best life, it's the best decision.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. So I'm thinking when people hear the word herbalism or herbs, some people might totally know what we're talking about. But I think for many people, they're going to fall into one and or three of these categories when they think about herbs, right? One is cooking and food, so kitchen and the garden. Two is maybe naturopathy, and three, maybe Chinese medicine, traditional Chinese medicine. Where does herbs and herbalism land for you? And what message about that do you want to share?
Yeah, well, I would say that herbalism encompasses all of what you just mentioned and more. Herbalism is the use of nature and natural ingredients for health. Mm-hmm. And most people, like you mentioned, think of herbs as culinary herbs, or think of herbalism as only plants as medicine. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I have always loved about herbalism, and one of the things that compelled me to commit to herbalism for so many years, is the fact that it encompasses nutrition, fitness, mental health, recovery, community. Yes, also plants as medicine. Yes, also, you know, exiting the matrix so we can gather perspective on our lives. It is a truly, truly holistic practice, or even lifestyle or worldview. That asks us to see ourselves in relationship with nature, and to work with that relationship, work with nature, to live our best lives. So we can be sick and need healing. We can be well and want to optimize. We can be looking for our purpose in life. Practically anything that we're working on, herbalism has some insight to offer to us. And that I love about it. So it does include traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda. Naturopathy is related. It includes food. So it's very, very comprehensive.
Yeah. I'm curious, you've got experience in the medical field pre-herbalism, or you don't?
I worked in fashion before herbalism.
Yeah, right.
However, yeah, I did. However, I grew up, so my father was an anesthesiologist and my mother was still practices as a functional health practitioner. So from the time I was very young, I was exposed to medication and surgeries and supplements and, you know, nature and all these things. So I have some exposure to it, but I didn't actually work in the medical field, no.
Yeah, right. That's so interesting that your parents were kind of like what we would see from the outside as opposites in their medical modality.
Yeah, they were opposites in many senses. That marriage didn't last very long.
I was about to say, are they still together?
Right, but it was very fruitful for my, you know, early formation. And, you know, I didn't intend to make herbalism my career or healthcare my career, which is why I moved to New York to work in fashion. But the reality is that from the time I was very, very young, I was practically obsessed with these ideas of our relationship to nature and how everything we take in through our senses affects our experience of reality. And that, you know, is something that I explored and studied. I studied a ton as a young person. And even, you know, while I was working in fashion on the side, I was, you know, doing early biohacking stuff. I was raw vegan and sober and like going on ayahuasca retreats, you know, decade plus ago. So it was always part of my personal life. And then of course it became part of my professional life. And I would say one related note is that I do work with a lot of science in my herbalism. There's a ton in naturally. I think just about any claim I made in the book, I have a reference for, and many of those are studies. Because I find them, number one, very compelling for anybody who's skeptical about the efficacy or the sort of, so that's in naturally. And then I just personally, in my studies, find the science to be a really good way to understand pretty exactly, or as exactly as we can, how herbs are working on the body. Mm-hmm. You know, what neurotransmitter are they modifying? What receptor site are they binding to? You know, these sorts of things. That to me has just always been very interesting. I study the body from a fairly scientific standpoint. So
yeah, it's always surprising to people, I think. And it was to me in the very beginning. So my background is I was a hospital research scientist in cancer originally before I saw the light, saw the matrix, if you like, and now basically oppose that modality in many ways. But what was interesting to me in the beginning is that there is such a vast amount of research on food as medicine, on Chinese medicine, on herbs, and people often, you know, sort of poo-poo this stuff, or it's like woo-woo nonsense, or it's for hippies, you know, and there's actually an incredible amount of data, like scientific data. It's just that nobody can patent this stuff and, you know, profit in the numbers of billions. So it's not really a priority. So, and even medical doctors would probably be some of the people that say, oh, that's, you know, not scientific. There's nothing scientific about that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I've had countless doctors say that to me, and I was like, well, I'm just gonna, I'll go home and work on this myself, thanks. I felt very proud the day that my dad got on board, because he was a skeptical medical professional, you know, and he's like, herbs, call me when you're over that phase, you know, and then he came around. I was like, okay.
I was going to ask you, like, what made you go more in the natural direction versus following in the footsteps of your father, you know, like?
I think for one reason, you know, when I made the transition from fashion to wellness, I was already, you know, into my career. I was older, and I wasn't compelled at that point to want to go to medical school and kind of follow my dad's footsteps. Yeah. He also, you know, I also wasn't interested in that as a young person, like as a career. I didn't think that that was something I wanted to do. And frankly, he advised that we don't, that my brothers and I don't, you know, he felt like the industry was changing and the potential for the sort of environment in which medical professionals would work in our generation would be so much less ideal than what he had in his generation, that, you know, he's like, do whatever you want, of course. But, if I were you, I wouldn't, you know, this is a lot of school and a lot of money. So it was just not something that I wanted to to pursue that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. It's a rigorous journey to get into that career. Yeah. Only to come out the other side and be like, oh my God, most of this is maybe not ideal. That was my experience.
Right. There you go.
But yeah. In that world of science and medicine, and sort of touching on what we spoke about before, and you used a lot of scientific references in the book, and there's a lot of scientific research to back it up. Do you have maybe share a fear that I have when it comes to natural health? Is that, and maybe I'll make this word up, but the scientification of the natural health world feels dangerous to me, in the sense that a lot of this stuff works because of the maybe I'm romanticizing it, but the magic of nature, you know, and there's also some, you could argue, some spiritual elements to being in alignment with nature. And so the more science and the more metrics and the more milligrams and grams and this dosage and at this time, it kind of subtracts from some element of that nature experience.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think, I mean, you know, herbs in particular have so many active compounds, you know, in a single herb that it is very often the case that science can confirm that the herb works for whatever we're treating, but not exactly how. Or it may identify this one compound is doing this one thing. The other 120, we don't know. and I think, you know, we also, of course, see in science and in the, you know, sort of supplement industry, the isolation and concentration of compounds. And we're taking them outside of the full spectrum plant form, which is often more effective than that isolated, concentrated compound. Yeah. So I definitely don't disagree that there is something magical or something that is still mysterious to our modern scientific method in herbalism and in the plant world. And depending on who the person is and what they're receptive to, you know, there's a lot of that magic or a lot of that energy or a lot of different things. And at the same time, you know, as I mentioned, I do believe that it's really convincing to a lot of people who are skeptical to have that scientific sort of proof of what these things are doing. So I don't know. I think there are certain industry, there are certain sort of chapters in herbalism that are getting a lot more of the attention or the potential scientification. That's the word you said, right? Yeah. For example, psychedelics, you know, like that's happening right now, and that may end up being really problematic. In terms of herbs broadly, there are so many plants out there. I don't know that, you know, we can even scientificize all of them. I don't worry about that too much. I think my interest has always been really like it's bringing people into herbalism, getting people to, you know, not to be afraid of it, getting them to understand it, getting them to embrace it. And I find that once people, you know, dip their toe in, you know, the next step is they're hooked and that's it. Like it's so convincing. It feels so right. It's so natural. I don't think I've ever met someone who's been introduced to herbalism, you know, understood it, and then said, nah, that's not for me. It's like, it's part of us. It used to be something we all practiced. It's in our, you know, lineages and our history. It's so interwoven with our species, or it has been for so long that I just find. So my interest is usually getting people in the door. And then after that, you know, I think if they want to go particularly scientific or the much more energetic, spiritual route, they want to work with like flower essences and these kinds of things, you know, then they can go wherever they want. So yeah, it's a little bit of my take there.
So getting people in the door is your passion. Like, what's that pitch?
Well, it's in my book. Naturally. I mean, the pitch is that, you know, herbalism is what so many people are looking for and don't realize they're looking for. We want to be healthy. We want to be well. Maybe we're healthy and well and we want to optimize, but we want to be living our best lives. And ideally, we're doing that naturally, right? Ideally, that's something that's accessible to us. Ideally, that's something that's sustainable, you know, something that is personalized, always perfectly personalized, something that doesn't have a bunch of negative side effects, you know. Herbalism is that. And like I said at the top of the episode, you know, it is that full circle. So holistically, you know, you can go to an herbalist with whatever issue you have, and they may not even give you herbs. You know, sometimes that disappoints people. So sometimes I'll give them herbs and then also the other thing. Yeah. But, you know, it's like, it might be a recipe for how to sleep better. It might be a recipe for, you know, some sort of self-reflection practice that helps us understand better why we're doing things that are sabotaging our health or sabotaging our lives. You know, sometimes it looks like therapy. It can look like a lot of different things. So, the pitch is that herbalism is the way to have a better life. Naturally.
With those groups of or the areas of herbalism that are getting attention, you mentioned psychedelics. What are some of the others, and why the bias to those?
Interesting. So, I mean, psychedelics, I think there's also the adaptogen trend, if you will. That's another. So those are both categories of herbs. So my book is actually structured by categories of herbs. It's a really easy way to understand, you know, we have thousands of herbs. So how do we navigate that world? Yeah. Well, they're broken down into categories. So adaptogens are a category. Psychedelics are a category. And I think the other category that's getting quite a bit of attention right now, not from the scientific community, but otherwise, is the category of aphrodisiacs or antidepressants or these sort of state-changing herbs that improve our mood. Oh, another one is nootropics, but that's not new news. Nootropics, yeah. It's been a popular topic for a long time, and not all nootropics are herbs. But for example, adaptogens became a buzzword quite a few years ago. I had my cafe open at the time, so it was probably 2019 when adaptogens became so popular that I remember, for example, people walking into the cafe and they wouldn't even look at the menu and they would just say, I want whatever has adaptogens in it.
Wow.
And it became clear to me that the misunderstanding because of the marketing of adaptogens was that adaptogens is a synonym for herbs. So it's herbs, people have all these connotations, you know, with it's like they're crunchy, they're old, maybe they're like, we're just talking about, you know, cilantro and sage, parsley, thyme, whatever. Or it's an outdated thing. No brand, and this is still the case, basically no, you know, modern wellness brands will say their product has herbs in it proudly, but they will say it has adaptogens in it. And it's this term that sounds sexy and new and people don't quite understand what it is, but it's like a functional, natural thing, right? And it helps with stress. Sign me up. So, is that making sense so far?
Total sense, yeah. Okay. I remember the adaptogen movement too, because here in Melbourne, the sort of more kind of healthier cafes, there was a lot of, you know, sort of mushroom adaptogen coffee drinks, you know, or turmeric with adaptogens in them. And yeah, I remember that phase
totally.
As well.
Totally, totally. So, I mean, the plus side of that is a lot of people started to, you know, use herbs. The downside of that is that they didn't realize that they were like embracing herbalism. They thought they were doing this new thing that was like adaptogens. And what adaptogens actually are a very small category of herbs, about 12 to 20 total. And they're herbs that work in a very specific way. There's a definition and only a certain number of herbs fit that definition. They are normalizing, non-toxic and therapeutic doses, and non-specific. And what that means is they work through the HPA axis in the brain to provide a normalizing effect on the body. So help us return to homeostasis more quickly, help us respond to stress in a healthy way, and then recover well. It's non-specific, right? So an example of a specific herb would be St. John's wort. St. John's wort is an antidepressant herb. A specific herb would be a stimulant, coffee. It does one specific thing and it's not normalizing, right? That's not normalizing.
But like going to New York.
Exactly, exactly. Adaptogens are the Costa Rica of herbs. We can say that. So they work holistically. And that is an example of, you know, a set of herbs that sort of baffles modern science, because they're raising the levels of something in someone, they're lowering the levels of something in somebody else. They're working on the body to help it stay in homeostasis. And again, it's a small set of herbs, but what happened is the wellness industry got, you know, fell in love with the term and started calling everything an adaptogen. They were calling L-theanine an adaptogen, turmeric, matcha, you name it. And so anyway, that's one example of a category of herbs that's been getting a lot of attention. I think this is a long topic, so I'll pause here if you want to move on.
yeah, we can go anywhere, but it's like the longer that I'm running a podcast / business, you know, and the deeper into the marketing world I get, the more that it's, you know, I remember long ago somebody said, it was giving me an example of marketing, and they said it was like applying for a job as a barista to make coffees with no experience, but you once made a coffee for your mum and dad when you were a kid. And it's like, I've done it once, so why not? Yeah. You know, and it's like, so that's how I feel about marketing. So like, when I put it through that lens, I'm like, that person might have only done it one time. Or they might have just accidentally... I eaten a mushroom and now they think their whole business is about adaptogens.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds accurate.
So yeah, it's a slightly dark world, the marketing world, but... Because you're listening here, I can safely assume you're an absolute legend. And so if you want to keep this party going, I'd love to invite you over to follow me on Instagram or YouTube, both under the same name of The Real Weight Loss Coach. Over there, you'll find different content in both places. It's different. So heaps of bite-sized pieces of information. So if you want to learn lots of things really fast with a bit of a scroll, or simply you just prefer some visuals, then scroll over to The Real Weight Loss Coach on Instagram and YouTube. So see you there. Thank you. And let's get back into the episode. It's interesting because I think, just as you're saying, the in that conversation around marketing, is that companies are afraid to talk about herbalism or herbalism in their marketing. Is that because they'll get less sales, or people will think it's not as powerful or not as amazing, and we need these sort of more fancy scientific words or language to impress people?
Yeah. Isn't it fascinating that we will buy something like adaptogens that we don't even know what they are. You know, these customers that I had, for example, don't even know what they are, but we want them, and we definitely want them more than herbs. You know?
Yeah.
You know, I think, look, herbalism, speaking of marketing, like herbalism as a brand, you know, it could use a refresh. And that is something, you know, I worked in advertising and marketing. So I have a lot of experience with that. And I think, you know, from the beginning, one of the things that I did in presenting herbalism was to try to present it in a way that was modern, sexy, cool, fashionable, whatever, you know. Case in point, you know, I would still wear my high heels and my bright lipstick and teach these herbalism classes, and people would say, like, you don't look like an herbalist, you know. And the point is, like, as the first line in my book is, we are all herbalists, and they don't have to look like, you know, this certain type. But herbalism as a brand, you know, generally is a bit outdated, and it comes with a lot of connotations, many of which are not positive or misunderstandings. And I think that's a hurdle that, you know, for many companies, they did not want to try to get over when they could just use a term like adaptogens and, you know, start fresh. But I think another point that is maybe even more prevalent is that so many of these companies don't understand the difference. And I work with a lot of companies in the wellness world and in the herbalism industry. I mean, herbalists know exactly what they're talking about, but in the wellness CPG space, many, many, many just simply don't realize that they're being inaccurate.
Yeah, that's which makes sense, I guess. And yeah, when most people, I think, maybe I'm wrong on this, but I think when most people hear herbs, they default to, like, oh, that's just stuff in the kitchen. Like, it's not very important or powerful, or like marijuana, and that's too powerful.
Totally. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, I think you're right. It's a lot of work to, you know, to try to change that perception or correct those misperceptions. I mean, I'm trying. Hopefully
here we are giving it a go. You know, as you were just describing your presentations and going with lipstick and heels on. So just to paint a little picture of our little family over here. So my partner is, she's Sri Lankan, born in France, and is super intelligent, psychology background, but also works as a model. She's incredibly stunning. Right. And we have like really nice things. She's very Parisian in the way that she presents. We've got really nice cars, but we are full hippies. And so we've got this little brand that we've put for ourselves, which you might fit into, which is Plain Sight Hippies.
Nice. I think, yes, I accept.
Yeah, it's
I'm
like
a total hippie, of course.
Yeah, it's like people wouldn't guess that the depth of natural health that we live in, that we you know choose to do for our 6 month old as well, and like
all that's great. I needed that so long ago.
Yeah. So we got this. We're accumulating people of plain sight hippies.
Great, count me in.
So I'm curious about these gummies and Pharmacon, like Supernatural. Yeah. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I actually now at this point, I have two companies. I had three when the cafe and everything was open. So the gummies are herbals. Mm-hmm. That's HRBLS. And that's a line of herbal gummies. We launched those in 2018. And to my knowledge, at the time, we were the only non-cannabis containing gummies on the market at that point. Obviously, gummies have become very popular. I had products prior to herbals, but I wound those product lines down because I was trying to find a format for herbs that matched my philosophy of it being accessible and, you know, simple and also effective, of course, and all these things, and realized that gummies are exactly that. Everybody knows exactly what to do with a gummy, you know. So we launched those in 2018. There are four SKUs right now. We have Nerveless, Everyday Endurance, Digestness, and Happy Hour, and each of those functions kind of are what they sound like. So the mm-hmm. gummies are made with blends that I have loved and used for many years and, you know, on many clients and myself and all these things. Mm-hmm. And then Pharmacon Supernatural is my sort of ecosystem of everything else that we do or that I do. It includes online classes, 10 plus years of content, lots of writing. We have a newsletter. I do, as I mentioned, a lot of consulting for companies in the wellness space, advise some of them, do a lot of behind the scenes product formulation or marketing language support, usually how to talk about, you know, what's in their products. So yeah, Pharmacon Supernatural is this whole ecosystem. And over the years, it's included other things like e-commerce and podcast and show and all these things. So it's kind of the digital world, if you will, of all of my work. So.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool concept to get those gummies out because, like you said, and we've been talking about that, you know, herbs need a marketing or a rebrand, you know, and so that feels like super accessible on the go, you know, can just put them in easily. And I'm curious that, like, where are they manufactured? What's the process? How do you preserve the integrity of the herbs in that process?
Yeah, so each of the formulas, I mean, I formulated them, of course, and each of the formulas contain probably about 5 herbs on average. And mm-hmm. in sourcing those herbs, every herb is sourced specifically and also in the specific format that's mm-hmm. ideal for it eventually ending up in a gummy. So for example, when we started, we were using, you know, fresh tarragon in the Nerveless. But when we scaled to manufacturing, you know, we had to change from the fresh tarragon, which was also impossibly difficult to source always, but so like gourmet. We had to change that source, you know, to a powdered tarragon form. Or for example, in the Happy Hour gummies, we're using this really cool herb called Kana, and Kana can also be a little bit difficult to source. It's probably becoming less difficult to source because it's becoming more popular. Mm-hmm. People kind of liken that herb to a natural, more subtle MDMA. It's a very mood lifting kind of empathy enhancing herb. But that one was so difficult to source in good quality that I worked with a private label company to source and extract into tincture form large quantities of kana so that we could then put that into our gummies. So long story short, all the herbs are sourced and extracted in sort of different ways. And then we used to do all the manufacturing in-house by hand for many, many years, actually, which was beautiful, but also obviously not... not sustainable for scale, but
totally.
Now they're manufactured in Arizona at a sort of a boutique gummy manufacturing company. And yeah, we ship them out right now. And again, lots of changes in the last couple of years, but we are now DTC only. We used to have quite a wide distribution B2B, but we've stopped doing wholesale and are now just doing D2C. Direct to consumer. So
yeah, cool.
Yeah,
I'm curious. So on this podcast, we talk a lot about weight loss and metabolism. Mm-hmm. How do herbs play a role there, or what kind of herbs would people go towards in order to improve? Because I guess what is coming to mind in the medical world from a marketing standpoint again is like GLP-1s, Ozempic, right. Mounjaro. You know, like every second person I speak to is considering it, on it, trying to come off it, and plenty of people that come off it have all sorts of symptoms and problems. Yeah. And so I'm curious where herbalism can match the energy of that move, that sort of medical movement or pharmaceutical movement.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually do have a section in Naturally about herbs for the metabolism specifically.
Awesome.
It's such an important topic. And that section is in the chapter in which I talk about liver health, because there's such a strong relationship there between the liver function, but also the body composition, as of course you know. So, I mean, herbs can be supportive in so many different ways. I think the most obvious is blood sugar balance. That said, my very favorite ingredient for blood sugar balance is fiber, but then we have lots of other herbs to follow that up with. One category that is very easy to work with and beneficial for both the liver and the metabolism is herbal bitters, mm-hmm. otherwise known as digestive bitters or digestive herbal bitters. And yes, they're the bitters that we often find at bars, though the ones that we find at bars are often artificial flavoring and not made with actual herbal, you know, extracts. But bitters are something that I think just about everyone can benefit from, and they're so effective. So usually we find those in a tincture form, mm-hmm. and it would mean putting some drops in your mouth or in some sparkling water or in some tea, usually before meals. They help to stimulate the digestive processes, kind of prepare us for whatever we're about to consume, and then also help improve detoxification and kind of elimination or motility. They're not laxatives by any means, but they have a sort of down and out. When we're talking about the energy of the plants, bitters have a down and out action on the body, but great for blood sugar balance, great for any kind of digestive issues. Berberine, which is an extract, of course, but berberine
is
phenomenal.
That's like the MVP in the natural health world, berberine.
Totally. Especially right now with all the, you know, with the topic we're on. Yeah, they call it nature's Ozempic. Really, really great. Again, yeah, blood sugar balance, which of course relates to cravings and these sorts of things. Gynostemma, otherwise known as jiaogulan, is another great herb for regulating blood sugar. Hibiscus is a very accessible example of an herb that's helpful for that. In terms of liver function, I love milk thistle. That's like, that's one of my top five, maybe top three herbs. I think we all need it regardless of whether or not we drink alcohol. And one of the reasons why I think it's so important is because the liver is often so overlooked in its role in hormone balance. Mm-hmm. And that's sex, stress, or sleep hormones, all of the above. So I really, really like milk thistle as just like a daily staple. There are so many, but yeah.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah, I think a lot of people, especially in my world, of sort of, you know, being post-hospital worker, leaning in natural health direction. A lot of the people that listen here are sort of have had either bad experiences or a lack of resolution in their problems from Western medicine, and they're looking for alternatives. And a lot of my clients as well are wrestling with the pull that they feel towards some of these drugs, but the feeling somewhere in their body that I shouldn't do it. Like, but I'm at my wit's end of need, you know, I can't find an alternative. I've been yo-yo dieting for 30 years. Like, I don't want to do it, but I feel like I've got no choice. So that's why I'm like, it'd be great to be able to give them a choice.
Yeah. I hope you can. I hope we all can. I feel like so many of my clients came to me for various reasons though, but at that stage, right? I've tried everything. My next option is surgery, you know, or my next option is this really like this prescription that I really don't want to take, you know, it's this last ditch, like, okay, I'm going to go talk to an herbalist, you know, and those all were success stories ultimately. So I really hope there are more and more of us in the world to help everybody who needs it with accessing, you know, the wealth of natural solutions that really, really are available. And that really are effective.
Yeah. And I hope we do a good enough job that people don't use us as the final resort. Like, you know, it's like, oh,
hey, that's on you.
If only you'd started there. Like, you know. Yeah, and my background, I've got a background in cancer specifically.
Yeah.
A lot of people eventually convince their partner and or mother or father or whoever, they eventually convince them after like relapse 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And like so much of the body has been burnt out by that point. And I'm like, oh, let's do our best. But it takes that much convincing for them to be like, well, I guess chemo's not working.
It's
sad.
Yeah. And imagine a world in which it, rather than as the, you know, last alternative or the last ditch effort, these ingredients or this practice or this mentality was being employed preventatively.
Oh, it's romance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, in pursuit of that, where can people find you online? Where are we sending people to get your book, to get into your world, to get more of natural stuff that works?
Yes, thank you. Send everyone, please come to RochelleRobinette.com. That is my website. It's all there. Sign up for the newsletter there. That's the best way to get hooked into everything that's going on. My book is front and center. It's Naturally, the Herbalist's Guide to Health and Transformation. And you can also find me on Instagram at Rochelle Robinette.
Fantastic. Links will be down below in the caption or the show notes. And this has been a beautiful conversation. I love how sort of chill it is. And yeah, we've just sort of wandered around and in and out of topics. It's been great. But now we're going to jump into our little real talk segment. So I'm excited to hear your answers that you've been pondering for the last month.
These questions are amazing.
All right, you ready?
Yes.
All right, number one. What's something that you believe now that made you laugh 10 years ago?
That I'll leave New York.
What's
that
one habit?
Yeah, I'll say a little more. That would have made me laugh 10 years ago. I thought this was it forever. Obviously, it's not. But one thing that this question brought up for me that I wanted to mention is, you know, it was really hard for me to answer this one because, and I realized why, I think I try to live in such an open-minded way that, you know, especially when it comes to change and changing my mind, you know, that something that I may not have believed 10 years ago, but like, would I have laughed at the idea of my future self believing it? I think not, because it's like, I think we should be, or we might consider being, you know, prepared to be surprised by ourselves, by life, by what's possible, by change, by transformation. Anyway, so that was a tough question.
What's one habit you'd be embarrassed to admit that you still have?
Also a tough question. I hope this sounds honest. I don't think I'm embarrassed about any of my habits. I mean, that's not to say that they're not all good. So sometimes, you know, sometimes I get lost in my phone. Sometimes this is my favorite. Sometimes I eat granola out of the bag with peanut butter in the middle of the night. Like sometimes I watch bad TV, especially if I've been writing all day, and then I become just gross after that. But but I also, you know, but I'm very comfortable with all of that because like I love the way that I live, you know, 99% of the time. And so if I'm doing something that feels, I don't know, you know, embarrassing or gross or unhealthy or whatever it is, I think that just works into the balance of like, well, so this is what wellness is sometimes. This is what health is sometimes. It's not always perfect. So
yeah, I agree with that. What's one supplement habit or wellness trend that you think is overhyped?
Anything that's a hack. I think true health cannot be hacked.
Yeah.
Not a fan of hacks. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. What's a rabbit hole topic you think more people should explore?
So I think that more people should explore when any of these ideas that resonate with them. So ideas of our true nature, embodied cognition, or anything related to how we relate with ourselves on the deepest level. And I say that because I think it is so primal and so root and such a driver of everything that comes after that. The more in touch with ourselves we can be, the better we are able to live truly meaningful lives that are right for us. This is a big theme for me. I'm like exploring it for future work. So I think, you know, living lives that are truly right for us and not just quote unquote right according to society or culture. And I think in a micro way, I see this in wellness. You know, things are trending. I need to take this because everybody else is taking this. I'm not even asking if it's, you know, what my body is asking for. And then on a macro level, you know, it's like, I see that same pattern in the way so many people live and become dissatisfied with their lives. So I don't know what that one topic is. I think it's something about, you know, true self and true nature. This is something that has always fascinated me, and I'm really on that kick again. So
in 20 years from now, what do you want to be known for?
My writing, which is another way of saying my thinking.
Profound. And the final one is, if everything you've ever said was deleted, what is one sentence you want to leave people with?
Too hard. It's too hard. Okay, but I pulled a quote from the book because I just was like, how do I answer this? I'll be thinking about this question for the rest of my life, is the reality.
You're welcome.
So here from Naturally is the one sentence that I'll leave you with. Venturing toward our true nature can be one of life's most meaningful undertakings. It's a seeing after which there is no unseeing. And in that, some aspect of our relationship to this experience of being alive is forever altered.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
What a nice way to round out that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here in this conversation. It's been great.
Thank you for having me. This was wonderful. So much fun.
No, you're welcome. We'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify every time an episode comes out. And inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it. Scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the Real Weight Loss Coach podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.